listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and as the name of the show says, each week we bring you talented and caring guests to help you gain answers for the family. I'm going to consider this show another edition of Catch Them Doing Something Good. Our topic today is discipline, and I think I've caught our guest doing something really good. My guest today is Dr. Larry Koenig. Dr. Koenig is the founder of Up With Youth and the creator of the Smart Discipline System. This system has been featured on hundreds of radio and television programs and is currently being sold in 8 languages and is taught in psychologists' office all over the country at $150 an hour, I might add. Dr. Koenig, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Alan. Glad to be here.
All right. I want to let everybody know I've had a chance to take a look at your workbook and the book itself, but also the workbook that really walks parents through, and I'm very impressed. And someone who's raising teenagers myself, I got to tell you, I think you're touching on some really good stuff.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well, let's start right from the beginning. How did the Smart Discipline System come about?
Ah, okay. Well, you know, this is a well-guarded secret. No, really, you know, my wife and I raised 5 kids. And, you know, it was an interesting thing. The kids were fairly well-behaved when I was home, but, oh, man, when I was gone, see, I'd call home, my wife would say, oh, the kids are driving me crazy. You know, and I'd come home, and she'd be absolutely frazzled. We just had to, when you have multiple children, especially, you have to have some kind of system of discipline to get them self-motivated to follow the rules around the house. Otherwise, you go crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us what the gap, what is the age gap that you had? If you had 5 kids, what sort of age gap?
Yeah. Well, they were all between the ages, when we started doing smart discipline, they were between the ages of 8 and 15.
Okay.
And so, you know, that's one thing. Smart discipline goes for a wide age, wide range of ages. It starts at the age of 4. Some people actually even started at the age of 3, but then it goes all the way up the end of the teenage years of 16 or 17.
Well, I'll tell you what, it sounds like your age range was very similar to one of our listeners who emailed us in a message, so, or a question. So what her question, it says, Dear Mr. Cardoza, please ask your guest, how do I get my children to do what I asked the first time? I know I should. I says I know I shouldn't keep telling them over and over, but if I don't, nothing gets done. She says.
Yeah. That's, you know, and that's one of the greatest benefits to smart discipline. It indeed gets kids to do what they're supposed to do the first time without having to yell and scream at them. And let me just tell you a little bit about that. What kids have to know is they have to know what the rules are. And one of the rules that we suggest in smart discipline is that we have a rule that says you must do what you ask the first time. That, you know, that's a great rule. But then smart discipline also says, well, kids need to know what the consequences are for not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to have a system. You have to have, you know, some charts and system to keep track of things. And so then, you know, if the child knows what the rule is and they know what the consequences are for not following that rule of doing what you're asked the first time, then what happens over a period of time, the child learns where, you know, you go ask them something to do something. You say, well, take out the garbage or go do your homework or you know, go clean up your room. And now, all of a sudden, in their mind, they go, let's see, I've got to make a decision here. Am I going to do this or am I just going to ignore mom or dad, as the case may be? Well, if they know what the consequences are going to be, if they do ignore it, well, then you've got a much, much better chance of that child saying, oh, wait a minute, I guess I better go do it.
Well, give us some examples of some of the consequences.
Well, you know, it depends on the ages. And and smart discipline, and if your child is 8 or younger, they're just simple things, anywhere from playing with favorite toys. In fact, a lot of parents have them make up a list of 5 privileges that are important to the kids, and you know, favorite toys can be on there, playing with their video games, watching TV, being able to go outside and play or ride their bike or trike or big wheel, whatever they're riding at the moment, or being able to have a friend over to play, or be able to go to a friend's house to play, or down at the park, have their snacks, be on the computer, things like that, simple things. Older kids, social privileges, anything at all that puts them together with their friends, on the phone with their friends. Of course, having a cell phone now is really big, Alan, right?
Right.
It's really big. Every kid thinks they need to have a cell phone now, and most do.
Mm-hmm.
Weekend privileges, spend a night, go to the mall, go to the movies, ride their bike, drive the car, things like that. You know, I tell parents at my seminars, you know, if you have any trouble at all coming up with a list of 5 privileges, here's a suggestion from a couple in Birmingham, Alabama. Went to one of my seminars a number of years ago, and a couple of days later, wife called the office. She said, you know, my husband and I wanted to get started right away. So we stopped at a coffee shop on the way home, and we got stuck in this list of 5 privileges, didn't know what to put on it.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, we came up with a solution that works so well for us, we thought you might want to pass along to the rest of the parents. So I'm going, well, sure, what is it? She said, well, we just waited till the next morning when the kids got up, and we started asking them, hey, kids, what are your favorite things to do? We just wrote them down, you know.
There you go.
Family participation, perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. No, that sounds great. Yeah, get it directly from them. And especially if you get it up front before they know what you're doing.
Right, exactly.
Now, on that listener that sent in the message, it says, I have 3 children ages 10, 12, and 16. And most of the time, it just becomes easier to do it myself. Now, and I think you must hear that a lot. I know that I hear that a lot. And I think all of us at some point just feel like you can get worn down to the point that it's just easier to do it yourself. How do you get out of that rut?
Well, you know, it is easier. Yeah, there's no denying it that it's easier to do it yourself. But the problem with that is that then you're always doing everything yourself, and the kids don't learn to do anything. What they learn, in fact, is kind of a negative. They learn that they can just do nothing. They can just watch TV, play with their video games, be on the phone with their friends, and mom and dad will take care of everything. And that's not what we parents are supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be teaching our kids to be responsible, you know, to be a responsible member of the family, to be a contributing member of the family. And so even though it's easier to do it yourself, in some respects, that's shirking our duties as a parent.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. In fact, it just reminded me of a comment I made to one of my sons. We had just gotten finished doing homework, and we sat down to have something to eat. And as we're eating, he asked me to get something. You know, can you get this? And I just unconsciously got it. And then he asked me to get something else. And I said, what did we just go over in your history book? What are some of the things we just went over? And when we were it was the history of the Civil War. And so as we talked about it, he said, well, you know, didn't we talk about this and we talked about that? And I said, and also I said, do you recall the fact that they abolished slavery? I said that includes parents too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so, you know, but a lot of parents have approached things like that over the years, and now we have this phenomena where kids, young adults, are returning to the home. In fact, 65% of college graduates return home now after graduation. 52% of young adults between the ages of 18 and 25 live at home with their parents. And, you know, so here you have these kids who have always relied on their parents to do everything for them. They're now adults coming back, living with their parents, and they're still reliant on mom to cook all the meals, clean up all the dishes, wash their clothes, clean their rooms, and do all this stuff. And boy, oh boy, talk about an insane situation in a home. That can become really dysfunctional.
Absolutely. Now, that, give us that first statistic again, because it was just phenomenal to me.
The 65% of college graduates moving home with their parents after graduation.
Exactly.
That's shocking, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, that was one of the ones, and I just, you know, my jaw dropped. I mean, 65%. So, parents, listen out there. Do you want them moving back in from college? Here's your choice. Either bring them up the right way, or you better move and not give them the address while they're in college.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, and it works out. I can't say that it doesn't work out in some situations, because there are some young adults that take responsibility for their lives, and they're perfectly fine living at home with our parents, and it's a delightful situation. But by the vast majority, it's a nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
It really is.
Well, and I was looking at some of the other things. I noticed that that you had on your site that talked a little bit about a national survey. Now, according to the national survey, what are the 7 top misbehaviors that seem to bug parents the most now?
Yeah, well, you know, what heads the list, every parent knows this, is disrespectful language.
Mm-hmm.
And even at the very earliest of ages now, you've got 3- and 4-year-old kids now that are rolling their eyes at their parents and telling them that they're stupid.
Right.
You know, telling them to shut up. You know, if that, I had a mother on an airplane a while back telling me, 3-year-old daughter, she said, you know, can I ask you about something my 3-year-old daughter's doing? I said, well, what's that? She said, well, every time I ask her to do something lately, she tells me to shut up. Right? And
where do you think she got that?
Yeah, well, that's what I asked her. So where'd she get it from? She said, well, I found out just the other day. She got it from her favorite movie that she watches, Toy Story. You know, Buzz is always telling Woody, shut up, shut up. Right? I was telling this story up in Fargo a while back, and a young father during a break of the seminar came up and he said, you know, I about fell off my chair when you're telling that story about Toy Story. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, just last night, my 4.5-year-old son, Eric, I said, son, time for bed, let's go upstairs. And he said, no, Daddy. I said, what do you mean, no? He said, no, Daddy, because you're an idiot.
Wow.
Where'd he get it from? Same place, Toy Story.
Ooh.
But they get it from their friends, too. Even if you, and here's the bugaboo, because there's a lot of parents out there now saying, okay, I'm going to limit TV and movies and videos and all that, which I think is a really good idea. But that doesn't stop it from happening, because you see they're out there and they're interacting with their peers at school, daycare, wherever, you know, at the mall, and they come home with it.
That's right. And I've said in many cases when, you know, the child says, yeah, but, you know, all of their friends are doing that. And go, you know what? All their friends aren't. That might be the only part of the conversation that they're having with that friend that they're taking at that moment because it works for them. But that's not what all of their friends are getting. You know, and I hear it more and more from parents. Well, you know, they're 16, so I have to get them a car because all of their friends are getting one and stuff. And I go, no, it's not. But your child is telling you that, and you're buying into it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's an age-old one. I used that one on my parents.
Yeah.
I think every child uses that. Oh, everybody else's parents are doing it, you know. And I guess the reason why that one has existed for so long is because it works so well for kids, right?
That's right. Yeah,
yeah.
And just like you said, you know, you used it, I used it. I think if a lot of us would maintain our memory, we would realize it's the same thing that we did, you know. So, you know, with it.
Exactly.
So, okay, and I would agree, too, that the disrespectful language is probably, you know, one of the biggest things. But, I mean, what are some of the other things that are coming up
in the
survey?
Okay, well, you know, the next one on the list, this is what really bothered my wife and I. It just drove us insane, and that's the fighting and the bickering. And I read a research study just a week or two ago, and I think it might have been in a Reader's Digest magazine, and they said the average family in America today, there's fighting and bickering occurs 3.5 times per hour.
Per hour.
You know, per hour. So that's basically once every 15 minutes you've got the kids, you know, fighting and bickering with one another. And, you know, and I'm sure that was true. That would probably be a low estimate at our house, at least before we had smart discipline. That was one of the biggest rules at our house, was no fighting or bickering. And immediately, kids would get an X on their chart. We didn't care who started it. It no longer mattered. Don't tell me who started it, because you're both going to get an X on your chart. And, boy, you know, boy, did we get rid of that fighting and bickering stuff. Gee, that was, you know, one of the biggest things I hear from the psychologists around the country that teach smart discipline. Of course, you don't have to go to a psychologist to learn it. You can get it yourself and learn it. It's very, very simple. But one of the biggest feedbacks I get from the psychologists that do teach it in their offices is their parents come back and say to them, you know, what we have now using smart discipline is we now have peace in our family. Mm-hmm. We don't have this fighting and bickering anymore.
Now, again, where do you think the kids are getting that? Is this something that is it an offshoot of the parents? You know, are they seeing it in there? Or, again, is this something that's coming in more so from television?
Well, you know, I think what happens, you know, kids naturally fight and bicker. I mean, it's what kids do. It's what they naturally do. And then what we parents most often do with it is that we yell at them, we scream at them, we threaten them, we do everything that's totally ineffectual. And the kids just continue to fight and bicker because there's no consequences to it.
Right.
I mean, so what? Mom yelled at me again. She yelled at me. She yelled at me 30 times today, and she's going to be yelling at me 30 times tomorrow. What difference does it make? You know, it's just a lot of misbehavior when it comes down to it. Stems back to no consequences. And you know, one of the reasons why this smart discipline has been around for, somewhat over 20 years now. It's in seven different languages, used throughout the world. And the reason why it has endured for so long is because it's so doggone simple, and it's based on the way our adult society works. Mm-hmm. For us adults to get along together, we say, well, we have to have rules, and those rules have to be written down. We all know that. No big deal. But that's not enough. In order to get people to follow the rules, we have to have consequences backing those rules up, right?
Right.
If you just had rules but no consequences behind them, we could not get along together. Life would be a mess. You know, let's take a football game. You know, we all in America, we're big into football right now, but let's play a game of football, rules but no consequences. Let's say Packers are playing the Rams. And the Rams quarterback goes back for a pass, and one of those 382-pound Green Bay Packer linebacker gets up in his face, grabs his face mask, jerks him down to the turf by the face mask. What happens? Referee comes charging out on the field, and he says, I saw that, and that was not very nice. We don't like that kind of thing out here in L.A. Now, please don't do that again. See, and it would be absurd. We couldn't play a simple game of football without both rules and consequences. We could not run our workplaces without both rules and consequences. It's a simple system, but it keeps most of us cooperating with one another. And guess what? It works well in a family too.
Right. Which, yeah, I think that's a great analogy, because essentially you're saying that particular lineman without a 15-yard penalty is going to keep doing it because his goal is to win the game.
Yeah, take the speed limits off the roads, and it would be just a nightmare out there, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, if you don't have any consequences for driving drunk, well, you know, so what? Everyone drive drunk.
Yep, I gotcha. Okay, well, yeah. I mean, what are some of the root causes? I mean, with a particular child, I know it's going to be different. In other words, each child is going to have different things going on with them. But is there a basic root cause for misbehavior?
There are, and I think it's important for parents to know what the root causes of misbehavior are, because kids are different. And if you know what the root causes are, then you know the solution sometimes can be different. For example, one root cause, there's three basic causes for misbehavior, and the first one is not enough sleep, and that's a that's a big problem in today's world. There's an awful lot of kids today who are not getting enough sleep. You know, and this is starting out at very early ages, all the way up to the teenagers. It's really awful in the teenagers now. Too many kids are getting 4 or 5 hours of sleep now. And when it comes down to it, a teenager needs between 8 and 10 hours of sleep. You know, and a child under the age of 10 needs anywhere from 10 to 12 hours of sleep. And if a child does not get enough sleep, there's consequences to it. One consequence is that they can't learn effectively. The brain doesn't work effectively when it comes to learning. The second thing is that they get very irritable, and their behavior when a child is irritable is bad. It's just like us adults, you know, when you don't get enough sleep and you're irritable and, you know, and you say and do things you wouldn't normally do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one, is not enough sleep. The second root cause of bad behavior is the child is trying to, they're experiencing some kind of what we deem as a negative emotion, and they don't know how to verbalize that emotion, so they act the feeling out with their behavior. You know, for example, if they're angry, you know, they push another child down. They don't know how to verbalize that anger, and so they strike back physically, or they even hit their parents, you know. Or they're feeling incapable or alone, or, you know, they feel like they just can't do it. They feel like the other kids can do it, but they can't. They've tried to do it, and they fail. And or they're afraid. You know, a lot of kids out there are afraid today now, afraid that their parents are going to get a divorce, or afraid dad's going to come home drunk again, or mother, for that matter, you know. They're afraid of what's going to happen at school when they go to school. They're going to be rejected. There's all kinds of emotions out there that are going on with kids, and kids tend to act their emotions out with their behavior. So that's the second thing that's going on. And the third thing, this is all parents know this. Kids act out when they don't get what they want. What don't they get what they want? Well, attention is probably one of the biggest things. Child wants attention. They're not getting the attention. So what do? They act out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, those parents tend to really pay attention to the child who's acting out. Or if they don't get a material thing, you know, you're in the grocery store and they, you know, or the toy store and they want something and you say no to it, and then they act out because they know if they act out, then their parent will give it to them.
Yeah, I know. It's from the standpoint of a different strategy. Now, I know that the positive strategy, and you're saying, I mean, make sure that the kids know the rules. You know, make sure that they know that, you know, you're going to tell them once, and they're going to do it the first time, and there's going to be consequences, and follow through with the consequences based on what the system says.
Yeah.
Now, it seems like that would be pretty logical, and I think most of us know we should do that, but what's the one discipline strategy that we seem to use anyway?
The number one discipline strategy that we use in America today, us American parents, what we're famous for, and we use this far more than anything else to get our kids to change their behavior, is criticism.
Right.
You know, and... you know, and there's good intention behind it. You know, let's say that's your my son Alan, and I'm coming back to your room, and your room's, you know, a mess, and you haven't done your chores, you know, and you haven't done the things you promised me you're going to do, and I come back and I say, Alan, you know, look, your room is a mess. You're just a slob. You know, I asked you to do your chores this weekend, you didn't do them. You know, what that tells me is you're lazy, you're irresponsible, and you're not going to amount to anything, Alan.
But wait. I promise if I can go out tonight, I'll do it tomorrow. It'll be the first thing I do tomorrow.
Yeah.
Sound familiar?
You know, us parents fall for that all the time. Okay, you promise, right? Yeah, I promise. You know, and we say, yeah, and of course the child doesn't do them, and they have all kinds of excuses for not doing it. You know, and the good intention behind the criticism is that we're providing, you know, I'm providing you some insight into what your faults are, you know, because I'm thinking, you know, you've got to know what your faults are Because, gee, what would happen if you grew up and you didn't know what your faults were? That wouldn't be good. Mm-hmm. But secondly, I'm being pretty harsh with the criticism in order to motivate you to change. So insight plus motivation, two good things, right?
Right.
Now, unfortunately, criticism has got some really bad side effects.
Absolutely.
Three things. First of all, criticism destroys a child's desire to cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more you criticize a child, the more they say, to heck with it. I'm not going to cooperate with you. Secondly, it destroys relationships. And it does that because in one of the ways we are as human beings, we just simply will not stay in a positive relationship with someone who is always criticizing us. We will not do it. And thirdly, the criticism destroys positive beliefs and establishes, worse yet, it establishes negative beliefs. Criticism, you know, all around is just a really bad, bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, let me explain something here. There's a difference between giving information and criticism. Perfectly fine. We have to, as parents, point out to our children what their unacceptable behavior is. You know, you come home, you walk in the house, and your teenager's son's socks, dirty socks, are sitting on the kitchen table. You have to say, hey, you know, your dirty socks are on the table. That's not acceptable. You have to let them know that. But what we need to do as parents is we need to cut out the critical part, and that's where we need to stop ourselves from saying, you know, look, Alan, you're just so inconsiderate. Your socks are on the table. You're so inconsiderate. You're a slob. You know, just get them out of here. You know, I'm tired of living around you and all your slovenly behavior. We need to stop it with that. We need to just give them the information, hey, your socks are on the table. That's not acceptable.
Right.
And then let him figure out, you know, what he needs to do about that.
Right. And I mean, if adults would look at it in the same sense as they would in a relationship with a friend, with a, you know, a husband, a wife, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, if they'd look at it in a relationship, you know, when you're in that relationship and that person is telling you how wonderful you are and how much they care about you and how supportive they are of what you do and how they can help you. I mean, all of those things. I mean, you want to be around that person. You want to keep your relationship with them going. When that person then starts criticizing and they're saying, well, you know, apparently you aren't what I thought you were, or I don't trust you, or you know, anything along those lines that is not supportive, you know. Sooner or later, you're not going to want to be around that person, and I think people have to realize your child is going to relate the same way. Sound about right?
Yeah, well, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, criticism is just deadly. I have another a wonderful marriage program called Happily Married for Life, and, you know, in that I talk about the criticism, too, and how deadly it is in every kind of relationship, certainly in love relationships. We just won't stay in a you know, positive relationship, and you're absolutely right. I mean, kids pick up the criticism habit from their parents. If they're hearing it all day long from their parents, between their parents, or from the parent to the child, then the child just learns the criticism, and they start criticizing everybody too,
right,
along with themselves.
It turns into a vicious cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that's it. And now, I've got to say that this is really deadly, and it's very, very common in families. When a child is starting to act out, what do? We just really pay attention to that negative behavior. And, you know, and here's a rule of psychology that you cannot get around. That is, whatever you pay attention to, you get more of. It expands. So if you have negative behavior and you start spending a lot of time on that negative behavior, that's where you're going to get more of. Yeah, I had a mother just over the weekend that emailed me about smart discipline, and she said, you know, I want this smart discipline system to work for us so badly, especially with my four-year-old son, because he is such a bad kid. He just never cooperates. His behavior is bad all the time. He's ADHD, He's just hyper, and his behavior is bad. But the worst thing is that he is totally uncooperative.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what happens with a situation like that is that a parent, this is a very common thing that happens. They get so focused on that bad behavior and those labels, those negative labels,
mm-hmm.
And they start telling the child that they're uncooperative and that they're bad, and they tell everyone else around them in front of the child, or at least within the child's hearing range, that their child is uncooperative and that they're bad. And so what does the child learn? Hey, I'm uncooperative and I'm bad. Okay,
right.
And the parent is hoping that by saying those things to the child, that it's going to cause them to now be cooperative.
Right.
Well, I've got some bad news for these parents. It's not going to happen.
Well, and it sounds like what they're getting is a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, exactly right. And so, what you know, one of the things in the Smart Discipline program that I teach parents is I teach parents how kids pick up beliefs about themselves, both positive beliefs and negative beliefs. And so, you know, with this mom, I'm teaching her, okay, what are we going to do differently here? What are we going to say differently with your words to create some positive beliefs and positive behavior? So, you know, I'm saying, okay, what I want you to do from now on is to look for any little bit of evidence that your child is cooperative, and you point out that behavior, and then you label your child with that characteristic. You're saying, well, look, you know, I asked you to take out the garbage, you took it out, that tells me that you're a cooperative child. I really, really like that about you, Alan. You know? And if you do this day in and day out, what happens is now Alan all of a sudden has got it in his head that he's a cooperative child. Guess what? Then he starts acting according to that belief, you know, becomes a rock solid belief in the child's mind.
Exactly. You want that good feeling, and you're getting a good feeling when you're interacting rather than the bad feeling you were getting
right.
when it was critical.
And it actually builds that desire to cooperate. Not only does it build positive belief, but it builds the desire to cooperate. And then you end up, you know, in a situation that too few of us parents are in right now, and that's the situation where you have a cooperative child when they're a teenager, and they actually want to talk to you, and the kids want to hang out at your house because your house is a positive place to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody, we are on with Dr. Koenig. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Doctor, I'm going to ask you a little bit about how things have changed now compared to the way they were back in the 60s and 70s. We'll be back in.
I'll look forward to it.
All right, we'll be back in 1 minute. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. And we're back. Doctor, tell us a little bit about the differences now, or at least the biggest differences in child behavior between now and the 60s and 70s when many of us were growing up.
You know, it's interesting when you read the different surveys from the 60s and 70s that, you know, behavior, misbehavior back then was just what they considered misbehavior back then at school compared to what's going on now is just laughable. I mean, you know, it's like what they were concerned about then was chewing gum and your shirt tail was out and the skirts were too a little bit too short, just things that are totally not even on the radar now. Now what you've got with kids is you've got disrespect, and not only disrespect, but vulgarity, just blatant disrespect. And you've got kids that at very young ages having sex, and of course, oral sex very big on there with a large percentage of the kids, far too large percentage of the kids now. And of course, then you've got the use of alcohol and drugs that is prevalent among kids, you know, and that's a big, big difference.
Well, how did we get to this point?
Oh, boy. You know, how did we get to it? You know, there was a, you know, everything has just kind of evolved in this society, hasn't it? And so much of it is I hate to blame television and the movies and that, but it's true. You know, back in the dark ages when I grew up, the 50s and the 60s, you know, on TV, the good guy always had to win. There was a very definite line between good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
Morals on television programs had to be 100% pure and appropriate and good Judeo-Christian values, and that was the standard. You couldn't show anything that deviated from that. And then all of a sudden we threw all those rules out, and golly, now we're wondering how we got to where we got. You know, parents oftentimes, you know, I get asked the question, well, how much effect do you think television has on kids? Well, you know, look, we're spending billions and billions of dollars, advertisers spend billions and billions of dollars advertising. Why do they do that? Well, because it has a huge effect on the listeners, on the viewers, right?
Exactly.
And you think these programs don't have a huge effect on your kids? Well, and they absolutely do.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that's why now product placement is so big. You know, it's not, you know, that they're placing it now. They're placing product in the shows because they're not getting as much bang for their buck on the commercials with people being able to fast forward through them and stuff. But the reality is exactly what you're saying. It still has a huge impact, everything that they're seeing.
Sure it does. So, yeah, absolutely. And you know, here's a couple other things, too. For some reason, parents over the years have gotten far more permissive. And, you know, here's the thing that drives me nuts, too. I've got eight grandchildren. Not that I'm all that old, Alan, because I'm still in my 50s. But I do have eight grandchildren, and they're all wonderful. But one of the things that their parents are guilty of, as well as many, many parents today, do the same thing, and that's they allow their children to make decisions. They give them all these choices to make at very young ages. You know, mm-hmm. at the ages of 3 and 4, kids are given all kinds of choices. Well, you know, what do you want to buy for clothes in the store? You know, do you want this? Do you want this? Do you want this? You know, which shoes do you want? Do you want to go to the park and play, or would you rather go to McDonald's? You want to go to McDonald's, you want to go to Burger King, you know, or Wendy's or whatever. And the kids are making these decisions in their car seats in the back,
right.
back of the car, right? And so we're empowering them at very earliest of ages. And so now, by the time they get up to 12, you know, they think that they have the right and a voice in every family decision that there is.
Well,
this is kind of crazy because they do not have, developmentally, they do not have the capacity to make mature decisions.
Yeah, but if you think about it, they do believe they have input in every decision. They can watch television and they can grab their phone and text and they can decide who the next American Idol is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And we're given all those power. And so you know, what happens in a lot of families, and a lot of your listeners will relate to this, is that you can have the nicest child in the world as long as you say yes to them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say no to them, then they become this nightmare,
right.
You know, to deal with. They just go off their nut when you say no to them. And you can have a 16-year-old child, when you say no to them, they throw this huge temper tantrum. It's like they're 2 years old.
Right. And they'll keep doing it as long as it works.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate thing is that they do it because they know sooner or later parents will give in to them, which is a big mistake, of course.
Well, now, besides giving them too many decisions to make at an early age, I mean, what are some of the other biggest mistakes parents are making now?
Here's a big one, and it's I don't want to make any parent feel guilty out there because some parents have done this with disastrous consequences. In fact, we're facing one of those in the national news right now, and that's leaving a child unsupervised.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we think that young kids can supervise themselves, and they can't. You know, the problem is that they are making decisions with the minds of children, you know.
Right.
And we think somehow this is okay to let the kids do this.
Well, but let me ask this. Why is it not okay now? I mean, I can look back and I was in, you know, came from a single parent and was essentially what they called a latchkey kid to where we came home from school because mom had to work till 5 or 6 o'clock. And, I think we did it actually a lot more then, and it was okay. And I think it would seem like we're doing it less now, but it's not okay.
Yeah, well, you know, it's two different worlds. I mean, now we live in a dangerous world.
Yeah.
You know? Let's call it. Call it like it is here. I mean, there are an awful lot of perverts out there, a lot of, sexual predators out there that are just waiting for us to leave our kids alone, and they're watching. They're watching and they're waiting, you know, and they watch to see what our habit patterns are, and that puts us at a great disadvantage because they know what they're doing, and we don't know that they're doing it. Okay, we think everything is right with the world until the child gets snatched.
Mm-hmm.
And if we really were cognizant in this, you know, in this country, how many kids this is happening to in both large communities and small communities, communities of all types, this is happening to, and I guess perhaps then we would make other arrangements to make sure that we didn't leave our kids unsupervised. But this is not only what I'm that's one thing I'm talking about. Another thing that we do as parents is that we, at a certain age, when a child gets 12, 13, 14 years old, whatever, 15, 16 years old, we decide it's okay for us to go away for a weekend and leave the child alone.
Mm-hmm.
And we all do the same thing. We sit down with our kids and we have a discussion with them, we talk to them, we lecture them, we threaten them to an inch of our lives. Don't you dare have your friends over here. Don't you dare do drugs. Don't you dare have alcohol. Don't you dare have sex. Don't you have any opposite sex over here. You know, you stay home, lock the doors, don't let anybody in. And we all do those things, and we are assured by our now mature children that they agree to everything. Don't worry about a thing. I'll take care of it. And all the while they're lining up their friends, you know, or their girlfriend or boyfriend for the weekend. They're lining up the drugs, they're lining up the booze, and as soon as we're out the door, that's what they're doing. And I hate to say it, but that's what I did when I was a kid, and that's what kids do. I know.
Guilty.
Yeah, right. And so what happens then is, you know, the kids today, you know, again, today it's more dangerous because you've got the drugs involved in there. You've got cars. You know, I just had a big linebacker used to play for the Dallas Cowboys in my office, and whose son, you know, he's 14 years old, had let him stay overnight with some other kids and didn't really check things out as well as he should have. Kids were not supervised, and they decided to go ride four-wheelers together, and one of the kids didn't have a four-wheeler, had never ridden one, so they went and borrowed one from some neighbors whose parents were gone. They had left it out in the backyard with the key in it, and didn't have any brakes in it.
So when the
14-year-old child gets on it, they're riding at nighttime, they drive up onto a road, he gets hit by a truck, you know, and now he can't walk. You know, and you're saying, gee, many Christmas, you know. The unfortunate thing as parents is that the consequences of our actions as parents can be, you know, long-standing. And I know we can't prevent everything from happening with a child, and I'm not advocating that we be these helicopter parents where we're constantly hovering over our kids, but on the other hand, we've got to check things out, you know. And it's not like it's not that we don't trust our kids. You can say, I trust you, but I've got to verify it. I got to call, you know, your friend's parents and check things out. Make sure that you're going to be supervised, because otherwise it's not going to happen.
Well, and I agree. And what I do is I tell them, you know, I would be, you know, I would not be doing my job if I didn't do this. You know, in other words, you know, if I say, you know, your care and welfare is of the utmost importance to me, and because of that, I need to do this. So you're right. It doesn't have to reflect on this. Doesn't mean I don't trust you. This doesn't mean any of those things. That means that this is part of what I'm supposed to do. That's why I'm doing it. So I agree.
Yeah.
Now I'm actually looking around, and I can't. I glanced up, and all of a sudden we're almost out of time. We've only got a couple more minutes. What I do want to do is that. I was thinking a little bit about the questions, you know, the questions that go through a child's mind, and my guess is they're probably not that much different than they went through our mind.
Actually, the three questions, what you're talking about, there's the three questions that go through a child's mind before they misbehave. First one, what if I do this? Second one, well, if I get caught, will I get punished? And thirdly, gee, if I do get caught and punished, can I get out of the punishment? And, you know, of course, if the child says, you know, can answer those questions, like, you know, I probably won't get caught. If I do get caught, heck, nothing's going to happen to me. And even if they do, you know, do something, I can always get out of it. Heck, then they've got a clear road, you know, a green light to do whatever they want to do. And what our job is as parents is to do something different, to make sure that they say that they answer those questions differently. They say, well, my parents are looking out after me, and if I do get caught, man, I'm going to get punished, and there's no way I'm going to be able to get out of that punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's what, you know, the smart discipline system does for parents. It sets that up for them so that their kids answer those questions that way.
Okay, and before we run out of time, and I'm sure there's probably other questions that listeners have, how can our listeners get more information about your system?
SmartDiscipline.com, that's probably the easiest way, SmartDiscipline.com. Or, of course, they can call our 800 number at 800-208-0807. That's 800-208-0807.
Yeah, and if those of you, if you're out there, if you're driving, and you can't write something down, you can still go to our website, go to answers, the numeral for thefamily.com, and we'll set up to where there'll be a link or a way in which you'll be able to get directly to his system. I got to tell you, I can't believe the time went by so fast. I'd love to have you back. And one of the things,
sure.
I didn't know about the happily married for life. I think that would be a great topic as well. So
yeah, well, it is. You know, my presenters around the country say, well, why do we have a marriage program? You know, we do stuff for kids. Well, exactly. My whole life is dedicated to helping kids grow up to be happy and successful. And one of the best things we can do as parents is to have a great marriage.
Yeah, model a great marriage for them. And
yeah.
That's going to be one of the greatest things. So, yeah, it fits right in with answers for the family. It fits right in with catch them doing something good. And as I said, I felt, you know, when I looked at your system that I really caught somebody doing something good. So again, Dr. Koenig, I thank you so much for coming on, and I look forward to having you on again.
Well, I'd love to do it, Alan. Take care.
All right.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Thanks.
Bye now. All right, that was Dr. Larry Koenig, and again, I've read the book, I have looked at his program, and I got to tell you, I am very, very impressed. Before we go, I want to touch on something really quick. For those that will be attending the IECA conference, don't miss the Aspiro Group of Programs 3rd Annual IECA Dance Party on Friday, November 13th. The party will take place at the Westin Hotel in the Providence Ballroom from 9 p.m. to midnight. You won't want to miss this evening of fun and friendship. All conference attendees are welcome. Brian Church's band Legacy will be rocking the house once again. And, to make it even more enticing, I won't be performing. Also, remember, when you see me, provide the correct answers to the two questions asked of IECA Executive Director Mark Scolaro. He was on a few weeks ago, and receive a prize while supplies last. For those that will be there in Charlotte, I'll see you then. Everybody else, hopefully you will be listening again next week. Have a great week. I'm out.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.